Welcome to Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And this is our Pledge Drive edition of Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. Please remember, listener support makes everything you hear on WYPR possible, including this show. Remember to go to WYPR.org or give us a call, 410-235-1395, and please give to the station. So, Cindy?
Yes, Tony.
It's Sunday.
Thank God.
Yes. What's the nicest kind of party to be invited to on a Sunday?
One that has really good food and some alcohol and
that's so specific.
Nice people.
That's so really specific. Wow.
Well, you know, Tony, I'm never quite
sure. It's like asking people, do you like music?
I'm never quite sure what you're
after. A cocktail party.
Oh, there we are then.
A cocktail party.
A cocktail party. I love a cocktail party.
It's Sunday. You don't want to be at it forever.
No, that's
true. But to have like a relaxed time, see some people, have
a
few beverages, maybe early.
Yeah, especially if you like are getting to know people too. That's also kind of cool. One of my neighbors did that when I first moved to the
farm. Frankly, you can walk away from them.
Well, but yeah,
you're not seated next. It's a short-term commitment, you know, sort of like speed dating.
Well, no, we've
with food and cocktails.
Right, got it. All right, speed dating.
Seriously.
Yeah, all right.
It's little bites of stuff, little conversations.
What's the perfect cocktail party?
Perfect.
Lots of them.
I think if you're trying
Lots
to have a perfect
ideas.
Cocktail party, you're not going to enjoy it. One.
Okay.
So what do you like at a cocktail party? Is it a cocktail? Is it sparkling wine? Is it
I think it's
wine?
Because,
is it beer, Cindy?
Okay, you know that I really never drank liquor until a few years ago. So I always loved, you know, champagne and wine, but and I really can't drink something with a high alcohol content like cognac or those things. I don't like drinking things like that. It's just too much alcohol. So for me, it's been kind of fun especially with the way that cocktails are done now, with lots of fresh fruit and purees and, you know, herbs and things like that and other unusual ingredients in cocktails.
Yeah, there's so much drama in cocktails now.
But I think it's fun. Like I just did an event in DC last night, and I don't know what in the world was in this thing, but it had bourbon in it, and I can't drink bourbon. But this, I don't think it had that much in it. I think that's why I was able to drink it. But it had, you know, some sort of tea in it, blackcurrant tea, and it had, you know, some juice and all kinds of crazy good stuff. And I was just super, and it had fresh rosemary in it, and it was super refreshing. So that's, I mean, if I'm going to a cocktail party, I think it's super fun to learn how to make something new. So that's my answer.
So, yeah, I think one of the things that when I picture a cocktail party, I think of my grandmother having a cocktail party.
Exactly. So and things have changed so much.
Yeah, that's everything in a decanter up on the bar.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Every kind of,
I mean, that's fun
every
too.
Kind of booze and, mm-hmm. and lots of mixers. Mm-hmm. But I think, like you were talking about, it's nice to be a little more concise, to have a sparkling wine picked out and maybe a red wine picked out and to have three different drinks you're serving, mm-hmm. maybe one or two other standard somethings on the bar.
Okay.
You know, I mean, to me, that's...
Well, you're always so smart. I mean, that's one of the things I always appreciate.
You have to be strategic about this stuff.
You're so smart about it. You are, you know, obviously this is our business, but I mean, you're just so, yeah, because you make things easier. Because you're right, that's my memory from childhood, is that when my
it's
parents
a lot
had
of work
those parties...
To entertain.
Yeah, and my dad always had that, you know, room, the thing in the family room that you open the doors and there was all this alcohol and stuff in there. And that's overwhelming to me because I'm not going to have 20 different kinds of alcohol, liquor in my house. Why? It'll just sit there forever. So I love the fact that you do that the way you just described, which is, here you go. Here's your beautiful red that I picked, and here's your beautiful champagne or whatever it is. And it doesn't, beautiful doesn't necessarily mean expensive, don't misunderstand me, but something good and fun.
But you can
and
get,
then some cocktails that are pre-made.
You can get ready in advance. That's
the
thing.
Yeah, that's super cool.
You don't have to ice them up. You don't even have to finish mixing them. Mm-hmm. And you just get some things together. You know,
get your mise en place together. Basically.
Exactly. Everything that's everything that maybe is not alcohol, mm-hmm. you know, like I've talked about before sometimes when you're making sangria.
Yeah.
It's like
that
the potion.
That was coming to my mind when you were talking. You know, yeah.
It's like you have the potion and then you have the finishing items. You have like three quick steps. So putting it together, you're good.
Yeah.
And if you're only really focused on, say, two drinks, make them very different from each other, one sweeter than the other.
Okay. I think people are really conscious of the amount of sugar in their drinks too, aren't they?
People have sent.
Does that lead
people
to a
like one
or
the not? They'll ask. First thing they'll ask is, "Well, which one is sweeter?"
Yeah.
So it's a hangover. It's you worry about your waistline.
Waist. Yeah. Okay. Wait.
You know, maybe you have like, you know, you get a sugar buzz. I don't.
Oh yeah, because I like liquor drinks with sugar in them. Well, that's apparently fair. I'm not concerned about my waistline.
Hello, people do.
Quite apparently, yes. All right. Well, I just want it to taste good and not be overwhelming with an alcohol taste.
That's one thing.
I mean,
to
that's
think
the
about.
Difference between drinking liquor and wine. I mean, I just feel like wine is all. I mean, I guess it's just because that's been my whole life. It's always been about the nuances of what's in a glass of wine, and it really enjoying that and understanding it and articulating it and all of those things, or just drinking it and enjoying it. But with liquor, I just feel like it blows everything out. It has such a strong flavor and has all that alcohol behind it. That's the challenge for me, drinking
but
anything.
But
like
you
that.
Just mentioned having a cocktail that wasn't that way.
Yeah.
It was
really good.
I do think you have to be, just you make the list. You make a cocktail with white spirits. You make a cocktail with brown spirits. Maybe one is stronger. Maybe one is sweeter. Mm-hmm. And you have a few, like, you have a good bottle of scotch and, you know, you have some other oddball something for, you know, you know you have three rum drinkers coming or something and
what's
mixes
a good,
for that.
What's a good red wine to pick for a whole group of people, you know?
A Côte du Rhône.
Okay.
You know, you want it to be fancy, Châteauneuf du Pape.
Okay.
You want it to be less fancy, a Côte du Rhône Village.
Okay.
You could do that in Italy. You can do a bottle of red Zinfandel.
Okay.
That's the kind of thing where it's like fun, happy, good fruit, spicy. Mm-hmm. One of the things you have to think about when you put this menu together of what you're going to serve for beverages is what you want to serve for food. That's kind of the, you know, that's the other thing that you have to keep in mind.
Of course.
So, I mean, you should have fun organizing that menu, but you have to take in consideration what food you're going to serve, what food for the season. Mm-hmm. So your drink roster may roll with that.
What about
the sparkling wine?
I was going to say, what's the sparkling wine for a group?
You have to assess how sweet it probably should be for the group.
Yeah, okay.
Should it be Prosecco, which is a bit sweet.
So is Prosecco always inexpensive? Is that?
Not always.
Not, right? Okay.
Not always. There tends
to be a less expensive option than champagne. I mean, I've never paid attention to the price of Prosecco.
Yes, less than champagne.
Okay.
The same pretty much as a lot of cava and conca.
Okay. So, but it's more affordable than necessarily doing. So if you are on a strict budget, then...
Yeah,
Prosecco is a good choice.
And that
and
satisfies
it's fun,
the...
it's light, it's refreshing, right?
People are usually pretty happy with that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, when we come back, we've got to get into food, hors d'oeuvres and all that sort of business. Please remember, on our Pledge Drive edition, Public Radio serves up appetizing stories every day.
Yay!
And listeners like you make it possible. It's the second day of our Pledge Drive, and we hope you'll become a member now. Here's what you need to do. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
This is the Pledge Drive edition. Thanks to everyone who's called in so far. We all appreciate the support. So, Cindy, we already started covering booze, liquor, spirits, cocktails.
Right.
You know, without giving...
Well, wait a minute. I need to know what the cocktail is that you're going to make. I want one full recipe cocktail.
For me, I tend to give people things that I like. So I'm not the most cocktail-y person.
Cocktail-y.
I'm not. I'm just, like I used to joke with the staff about my version of a whiskey sour, which is you pour the whiskey in a glass and you take an orange peel and you rub it around the rim of the glass and you throw it away.
Okay. That's it?
Yes.
All right.
So, but... I've tried to be less curmudgeonly.
Yeah.
But it's still a cocktail that I do like is a Manhattan. But I have big surprise, a very fussy particular variation
Let's
on
hear
a Manhattan
it.
That I
Let's
like.
Hear
so
fussy.
And it's a bourbon Manhattan, not rye or Canadian whiskey. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm curmudgeonly enough to like Canadian whiskey. So think three parts. A lot of times it's 2-1 for a Manhattan. Think three parts of that bourbon. And for me, it's something like Bell Mead or something. I'm going to have one. So something like that. That's a favorite one for me. That has a little more rye in the mix than some others that are just all corn liquor. So that, three parts. One part, a very good vermouth. Mm. So whether it's Carpano, Antica, or Punta Mes, or whichever one is one that you like, there's some that are made from the made in sherry barrels. There's all kinds of exotic vermouth out there these days. But you want something, you just pick the bourbon that has good punch. You want vermouth that has good punch. For me, I always find the drink a little bit too sweet.
Okay.
So I want all the flavor, but I don't want, you know, something that's going to be, I want it to be refreshing still. So for me, I squeeze about a half a lemon per drink. Mm-hmm. So if I'm doing 2 ounces and 2/3 of an ounce on the spirits, then a half a lemon to that, which for some people is probably too tart. But for me, I like that. I want something to be refreshing. And I serve mine on ice.
Okay. All right.
And even the most fussy thing is that when cherry season comes locally, we preserve our own cherries and vermouth.
Okay.
Sour cherries to...
That's nice.
To put in...
That's fun.
So that's kind of a fun thing, but there's a cocktail recipe.
Okay.
And, well, let's start with hors d'oeuvres. What are your favorite to... Actually, not your favorite to serve. What are your favorite to eat? Your favorite hors d'oeuvres to eat at a cocktail party?
You know, this isn't probably what comes immediately to mind, but I just love plates of cured and smoked meats. So, I mean, that and that's so easy for people to do. So, you know, a good assortment of that.
Prosciutto di Parma or good salami or, you know,
jamon. Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, there's just so many different things you can get, or Rosette de Lyon. You know, something good and, you know, kind of chewy too is fun, not just beautiful, so thinly sliced things.
And that's a salty.
Something you sink your teeth into.
That's a salty something for sure. And that's nice to have. A lot of things are stimulated.
Right. Cheddar pennies are always going to be one of my favorite things. And it's a simple thing to make. And the nice thing about the little, they're just little.
Well, cheddar pennies are easy to.
Like crackers, but not. They're really good. Or little tiny flat biscuits. I mean, I really don't even know how to describe them.
You can do things with them too. You can put little mousses on them.
Right.
You can garnish that. And
which is what...
It can look fancy if you wanted to, or it can be like the great little cheese biscuit.
Right. So you can either just have this bowl of these wonderful... And, you know, if you put just a little bit of extra cayenne pepper in them and you use a really good piece of cheddar, or you can use, you know, just a good piece of cheddar. But if you use some sort of cheese that's really kind of special, we put a little bit of cheddar and Reggiano in ours. And, we use a good piece of cheddar from the British Isles, but a little bit of cayenne, a little bit of black pepper. But you can make those at any point in time, roll them and put them in the freezer. And then all you have to do that day is pull them out, let them soften and slice them and bake them. So that's a really nice thing. And, you know, you talk about garnishes for it. We make a tasso ham mousse, or you could make a mushroom mousse. I mean, there are a million different things you could just pipe and put on top of there. Even a flavored butter. You could talk about foie gras. You could take it all the way over to the top and do a little tiny bit of foie gras butter on top of it just to make it super fun, but it's totally unnecessary.
You can make it easy. Just whip butter with chives or something and
absolutely
pipe that on there.
Yeah, but cheddar pennies are a fun one and easy to execute.
So a recipe for cheddar pennies?
I'd have to give that to you. I don't, you know, as long as I've been making those, that's not in my head, and the recipe's huge anyway, so we'd have to, we'll put it online.
Yeah. So if you want to find that or any of the other episodes of the program, go to the WYPR.org website, find the Foreman Wolf page, and you'll see podcasts there, and you'll also see not only a cheddar penny recipe, but also a link to donate to support the pledge drive.
Yeah, that's good.
Which we have to talk about because it's what keeps the station going.
Absolutely. And one of the other sort of very simple things, not to go too much on the same subject, but our little sesame crackers as well. So you can just sort of alter
people like
the
crackers.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's easy and it's super
crackers,
satisfying.
Crackers beg dips.
Yeah. Yes.
That's kind of
okay.
And those are easy, prepared well in advance, and
right, right. So, you know, if you have something like that, you have meats laid out, and I love bruschettas. So, you know, for me, I'm still getting a little bit of tomatoes in my garden, but you could do zucchini. That's coming out. You could do all kinds of different things. You could do a little crab bruschetta. You could do a shrimp bruschetta. So vegetable and or seafood meats. But with bruschetta, I kind of like them to be long pieces of baguette. Saute it in butter and on the stove, or bake them in the oven, which is a lot easier. Just brush them with melted butter, bake them at 350 degrees, usually for, you know, not too thick of a slice of baguette. It's about 5-6 minutes in the oven. But get them to the point where they're crispy, but not so hard that they break. sort of short of that. Because if they're too soft, ugh, that's not going to last.
Yeah, let's. I want to stop you 1 second. Let's talk about pragmatics.
Okay.
If you make the toast part for the bruschetta,
mm-hmm. Put them in a basket.
And the most traditional way is to grill them. You either, one, going to set up something for people to build for themselves.
Yeah, I would put them in a
basket.
Or
two, you're going to lay them out already set up.
Yeah, and the only way you can do that is if people, you say, go eat them now, pretty much, or you pass them. Which, for you know, by passing them, you're forcing people to, you know, go ahead and eat it right now. And that's the only way you can put the garnish on ahead of time. Otherwise, as you say, garnish needs to be in a bowl on the table. And then you just say, hey, these two things go together.
The worry with that is they're never going to find it.
Right. Well, I mean, you always want to make it easy for people. And that's my goal with everything that I do. I have to make it easy for my cooks. I need to make it easy for the waiters. I need to make it easy for the guests. So just pass them.
For
the best thing
to
do is just pass
party.
Them.
Yeah. And pick one or pick two. Mm-hmm. That's a very good spot for a vegetarian item.
Absolutely.
And that's something that you're going to want to think about is what are the dietary needs of the group that you have. So you have another vegetarian bruschetta that you
a nice one
that you like to serve.
Is just let a really nice goat cheese just come up to room temperature. Add a little bit of pepper to it, maybe add a little bit of under whipped cream to it to lighten it up a touch, or you could just add a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. You can actually, if you want to bring out your food processor, process it quickly with the pepper and the olive oil, and you can pipe that onto toast points too. So, or you could use it as a dip. I mean, so there's a lot of things you could do with something like that as well.
One of the good things about something like that, also pragmatically, is that usually you want to make things that have two bites to them. You really don't want someone to bite into something and all this stuff to drop on your carpet or your floor. That's not the most fun. So we're going to take another quick break on Formidable from Food and Wine. You can become part of the team that makes public radio possible. Become a member now during our pledge drive. Here's how. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Thanks to everyone who's just been calling in. Our program wouldn't be possible without WIPR members, and we're really grateful for that support. So on this week's program, it's a cocktail party,
mm-hmm.
which would be fun to having while we're doing the show, but we're talking about doing it, and a lot of people entertain that way. So I would be grateful for one more recipe for an hors d'oeuvre that's a good one to pass.
Okay.
That is not a mountain of work. That's an easy one to do it, not worry about being hot, because we'll talk about that stuff in a minute.
I think one of my favorite sort of room temperature things, too, besides obviously having cheese out, which is also, okay, and talk about making it easy. I think it's best to just go ahead and slice cheese rather than trying to get people to cut it themselves. There's no question. It's a lot easier to just, and they'll eat it more if you slice it for them. But something else at room temperature or cold going out is just a really good version of hummus. And or just cooking, you know, and this is something you could even make not only a day before, but probably even 2 days before, and enjoy yourself and your family enjoy before your cocktail party. I mean, you could just make a big old batch of it.
Road test it.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, just cook your chickpeas in water or chicken stock, whichever way you want to go, if you want it to be vegetarian, so water. I would put a little bit of garlic in the water, which I would saute first gently. Do not allow it to brown. Saute it in a little bit of olive oil and add it to the water. A little bit of onions, and let the chickpeas saute the onions as well. Add the water and or chicken stock. Do not add any salt, because beans, chickpeas in particular, take forever to cook. Also soak them first. And so soak them first, then make your broth and cook your chickpeas until they're tender, and then puree them with a little bit of raw garlic, a little bit of salt, pepper. I'd put some cayenne in there, definitely lots of lemon juice, a little bit more olive oil. You could add a little bit of corn oil as too to just give it some richness. You don't want the olive oil to blow out the flavor of the chickpeas. And put a little bit of tahini in at the end, and it's just so good. So a little chickpea puree. But that's fun, and then you can have all sorts of crackers or toasts or make your own tortilla chips or whatever, and, you know, just have a big bowl of accompaniment for that.
So let's talk about some hot stuff.
I have to say, I know where we live, making crab cakes for hors d'oeuvre is so easy. You can, again, have them done the day before. You can brown them before anybody gets there.
So much is about getting it the right size.
Yeah,
for
they
an
need
hors d'oeuvre
to be tiny, yeah.
Because they just fall apart on you, so...
Right. Yeah, because you don't want, obviously, you want as little breadcrumb as
possible. And then if it's tiny, you don't want it to be dry.
Right. So the way I make my crab cakes is I buy jumbo lump crab meat, Maryland jumbo lump, and obviously you pick it carefully without, you want to do your, it's a fine line between removing the shell and trying not to break up the lump. I mean, what's the point of having the lump if you're going to break it up into tiny pieces trying to get the shell out? So there's a fine line there. But once you've cleaned it, I make a mixture with mayonnaise, whole grain. I use Grey Poupon, country style, whole grain mustard, and mayonnaise, and a little bit, tiny bit of lemon juice, a tiny bit of Tabasco, and that is it. And so that's the mayonnaise that gets added to the crab meat. And then I use panko, which is a crispy Japanese breadcrumb that has basically no flavor. It's just this crunchy thing. And I put a very little bit of that in, and that holds the cake together. And I usually do either 1 ounce cakes, which are really little, or 2 ounce cakes. And you can either, again, just put them out on a tray on the table and say, hey, you guys, crab cakes are out. You have to come and get them. Or you could put them on a little toast point.
The 1 ounces are good for a pickup.
Yeah.
You know, you can put those on a tray. You could garnish it or decorate it with something, mm-hmm. and someone can just pick that right up.
Yeah, or you could put it on it would have to be a thick, but a cucumber slice is also a good one because cucumbers and crab cakes go really well together. So that at least gives them a vessel to pick it up, or if you're passing it, and even if they don't even eat the cucumber, you know, just pop the crab cake and, you know, that would be, or just finish with the cucumber, but do slightly salt the cucumber. But yeah, that's, you know, people get so excited whenever I've had people over and I do crab cakes. So I think that's a nice one. And the other one, you know, something sort of a little bit old fashioned, and it just made me think about it when you started talking about those drinks, is doing, I haven't had this in so long, taking a shrimp, wrapping it with a little bit of, or encasing it in a little bit of crab cake mixture, and then wrapping it in a thin slice of bacon and roasting it in the oven. Oh, gosh. Those are so good, and that would be really fun. But your bacon needs to be pretty thin because obviously you don't want to overcook the shrimp or the crab cake mixture. And but you do want that to brown a little bit. You could even blanch it a little bit ahead of time before you wrapped it to
the bacon,
kind of get it going. Yes, or just sauté it
Render a little fat off.
Render it a little bit and get it going, and then it won't take that long. And if you have a broiler, everybody has a broiler in their oven, just broil them, and that's a fun one, but that's sort of old-fashioned. Tony, what would you serve with, what kind of cocktail would you serve with crab cakes?
Well, crab cake is a reasonable thing to have a cocktail with.
Okay, good.
You kind of get an all-purpose guy out of that. Nice for wine, nice for beer, nice for a cocktail. I don't think you want anything too sweet. Crab meat's pretty delicate to begin with.
Yeah.
And you don't want anything wildly strong and something pretty clean. So if you have someone who's a martini drinker or a variation on that, that's not a bad way to go. Maybe you want that on ice instead of mm-hmm. straight up. But you don't want, you know, all the alcoholic muscle in the world. A gin and tonic.
Okay.
Something along those lines or variations on that kind of thing. Gin is nice for crab meat.
Okay. What do you like for hot hors d'oeuvres?
Well, you know, one of my favorite sort of cheater hors d'oeuvres. Everyone loves fried things.
Mm-hmm.
It is not so easy to fry in your house.
It's not.
Your whole house is going to smell like fried chicken.
And you have to dispose of the fat.
Yeah,
it's
a lot to deal with.
Like drag.
So
yeah.
Then you think, what is crispy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, puff pastry is really crispy.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody
loves puff pastry.
If you make a nice tapenade, say green olive tapenade,
mm-hmm.
and spread it on a slice of puff pastry.
Oh, your pommiers.
Yeah, you can roll them into pommier, and they're so easy to make.
Yeah,
that's something I'm sure that you can find a YouTube video on.
And you can put
on
a gajillion things inside of there,
Exactly. Pommiers are that thing that when you're a little kid, you call them elephant ears.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The pastry that
we think of as a sweet pastry with sugar on. Yeah.
And as you roll them, then they kind of get ribboned with whatever you spread on them.
Right.
So for me, I love the green olive thing. You can do mushroom d'Uxelles.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all things that you could do three different things.
Cheese, Reggiano,
and be passing them separately.
Goat cheese, yeah.
Yeah, there's
a million
peppers, a pepper mousse with goat cheese. It'll be a little spicy. I mean, there's a million things you can do. A little forcemeat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could
little pork sausage in there.
Yeah.
Well, that would be good.
Frankly, you can grind.
Oh, God, because all the fat would go into the puff pastry as it's baking.
You could grind.
Lordy, that would be good.
You can grind prosciutto.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that would be good.
You know?
You could put black bean puree in there.
Exactly. And that's pop it in the oven. It's probably a 400-degree until they brown a little bit, and you're done.
You could do shrimp, cilantro, and jalapenos, like all chopped up and in there. That
exactly.
would be yummy.
I mean,
too.
That's
it's such a good vehicle. It's
an easy vessel,
right?
And what you get is something crispy that's flavored with what you've topped it with, and you don't want it to be wildly covered with it.
No.
You know, it's like heavy butter on toast.
Right.
Well, that's about how thick you want it to be.
The pastry's like a sheet of paper, and you have that on the table, and then you put your ingredients in it, and you roll one towards the middle and the other side towards the middle as thin as possible, and then they meet in the center.
Yeah. And then you have this sort of log of
and brush it with egg
pastry,
wash.
And then you just cut slices.
And you slice it, right.
And lay them out on a tray. Mm-hmm. On parchment paper is much better than...
Oh, definitely. You need
than
parchment.
Just laying it on a metallic cookie sheet or something.
Yeah.
But that's that is one of those, like, always keep in the back pocket.
Okay, yeah.
Some hors d'oeuvres.
That is fun.
The other thing that I always like to do are pinchos. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's kind of everything on a spear.
Yeah.
And make them small enough so that you can actually get everything in one bite. If it's going to be caramelized green apple and green olive and a spicy pickled shrimp or something, great. But make sure that they're small enough pieces that you can actually get that whole bite.
Right. We want people to be comfortable.
But that's kind of an easy one to deal with. And there are a million different ways to make those. But that's literally that when you see the two or three things on a little spear, that's a pincho, the classic thing from Spain.
It's good.
So, and coming up in your near future is a chef's challenge, Cindy.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that we start to begin to raise your stress level.
I'm so excited. All right.
Are you?
Yes. Always.
All right. Well, we've got that to talk about. Right now, we'll go back to the pledge room to talk about why it's so important to support public radio. Of course, we'll take your pledges. Here's the number to call. Welcome back to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. This is the Pledge Drive edition here on WIPR. Thanks so much to everyone who's called in so far. Now, do you have pregame stress on the
you're going first,
Chef's
Tony.
Challenge?
Here
what?
You go. Yeah, here you go. There okay. you go. And I even drew on it for you.
Oh, you did doodle on it. Good Lord, your attention span is short. All right, let's see.
Not really.
All right, well, this is not cocktail party ingredients, looks like. Black beans, blue potato, cherry tomato, artichokes, langoustines, lemon, lime, extra virgin olive oil, butter, cream, peanut oil. It's like you lined all the fats up. cilantro, chervil, lamb rack. That's jazzy.
You can make cocktail food out of all of that.
Oh, sure.
That's your job. You have to make a cocktail party out
beets.
Of all that food, Tony.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, the first thing I want to do is I want to do pinchos, like we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. Grill those porcinis. And... well, I guess it's just cilantro and chervil. A little bit of the chervil, extra virgin olive oil. And I want to get that. Also grill those cherry tomatoes and the artichoke bottoms. That'd make a pretty nice little pincho, I think. Mm-hmm. Black beans, blue potatoes. I have a feeling that there is a layered dip that is possible with those guys. The beets, the black beans, and the blue potatoes, making three different mixtures. Do I get some garlic for this?
Sure.
Because one of these I want spicy, maybe the black beans, and the potatoes I want garlicky. So, and the beets, maybe a little sweet, you know, just kind of layer those guys in the glass dish almost the way that you would.
So the potatoes, blue potatoes.
The seven-layer dip that you get.
All right, the black beans and the beets?
And the beets.
That's the dip? Yeah. You're putting beets in your dip.
Yeah, one garlicky, one spicy, one sweet. But the three, it layered three different dips all layered out.
All right.
Okay. The lamb rack, you gave me lamb veal stock, and I'm not probably going to use for an hors d'oeuvre. The lamb rack, I've never been able to manage when someone just hands me a lamb chop at a cocktail party.
It's kind of like a pincho.
Yeah, I mean, but I would do something.
Depends on how big the eye of the rack is, how big the racks are. If they're like, you know, smaller racks, 12 ounces, you could do them.
And the langoustines are easy. I mean, that's you just...
Yeah, I think langoustines would be a really super fun
hors
d'oeuvre item.
You gave me the butter and the cream. I mean, I would want to turn the langoustines. And there's oil. And if I had an egg, I could make a little mayonnaise and do little langoustine cakes with with the cilantro. And some of that garlic that I don't have. Parsnips and celeriac. Yeah, I guess it's going to be have lots of little goodies and sit down and have that lamb rack with roasted parsnips and roasted celeriac. And the lamb rack, I need a stronger herb than cilantro shrivel for. So I may have to go out in your garden and find some rosemary or something along those lines.
That would be possible.
Yeah, but the parsnips, celeriac, and more of the garlic that I don't have. Roast those guys together.
I should grow some garlic next year. I'd like to see that
and
happen.
The trick with lamb rack, if you're going to roast it, is to get it good and brown. You got to spend the time on the top of the range, getting it brown in its fat, making sure it's been seasoned. You know, you got to give it that massage with the salt first.
Mm-hmm.
So that it'd be nice to have all those snacks and then sit down to. And now I want to make langoustine cakes. If you had the roe, you could use the roe as a little part of the garnish.
That would be fun.
You could do a little bit of whipped cream that's not sweetened and garnish with the roe and some of the shrivel. I might have to do that now. All right. I appreciate the lavish ingredients. This is not the lavish ingredients. This is leftovers.
Okay.
You need to make a meal out of leftovers. It can be as casual as you want. Could be sandwiches. Could be grazing stuff. Could be a little buffet. But it's leftovers.
Yesterday's turkey meatballs.
Yep.
Tomato, provolone cheese, green olives, crusty bread, pasta, my choice.
Pasta your choice shape.
What does that say? Preserved fresh tomato, herbs from the garden, Greek yogurt, garlic onion shallot, Calabrian chilies, 80% chocolate, basmati rice, and smoked salmon. Well, I didn't expect to see smoked salmon at the bottom.
Leftovers.
All right. Yeah, all right. I like a refrigerator with leftovers. It allows you to actually, you know, you can get something done with that.
Yeah, and pretty quickly.
Yep. So yogurt is obviously for the smoked salmon. And quite frankly, the Calabrian chilies might be a whole lot of fun. And actually, I'm also going to...
The chilies for the smoked salmon?
Oh, yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to mix a little bit of the chilies in with the Greek yogurt, and I'm going to have the smoked salmon laid out on the plate in a line, and then have a line of hot basmati rice and have the Greek yogurt with the chilies in it. Yeah, uh-huh. That would be good.
Wait, are you going to roll this like sushi?
No. I said in lines. Okay, I'm not rolling anything. But you could. So, you could, but I wouldn't.
I'm not saying
it's my
you're
food.
Rolling anything.
It's okay. My chef's challenge,
all
Tony.
Right, I'm just curious.
Yesterday's turkey meatballs,
to
I'm going
to
throw them at Tony, and then...
I will try to catch them in my mouth. I love good turkey meatballs that have duck fat in them.
All right, so you've given me tomato and provolone. Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of like you put a line going here. I'm going to heat those turkey meatballs in the tomato, which I'm going to add some of the garlic, onion, and shallot to that you gave me. So cook the tomato, basically make tomato sauce. And I'm going to add, so the turkey meatballs that are old, yuck, are going to go in the tomato sauce.
They're yesterday's. They're better the next day. What's wrong with you?
And I've got a, what kind of pasta do I want? I want, I think rigatoni. Yeah, so rigatoni is going to go with the meatballs and the tomato sauce. And then the provolone cheese, I'm going to julienne it and add it on top of the dish and broil it so it browns on top. And then the green olives and the crusty bread, I'm going to make bruschetta with green olives and toasty bread, and that's going to go with the meatball, tomato, provolone, cheese, pasta business. And then 80% chocolate, I'm just going to be eating that.
There you go. What are you going to drink with your leftovers?
Definitely the bottle of Southern Rhone wine.
Yeah, a little Southern Rhone wine.
How about you?
With this lavish meal?
Yes, with your lavish cocktail party meal that ends
cocktail party,
with sit
down
lamb,
with lamb
sit down.
Yeah, sit down with a lamb main course. That sounds like a pretty good party.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Leftovers can be really good, but... It's not this list that you gave me.
That's certainly not.
No. for cocktail time, maybe something like Suave Classico or nothing with oak, something refreshing. Could be an Austrian Grüneveltliner. But I think maybe something a little bit bigger, fruitier, gutsier. Maybe a Fiano d'Avellino would do it. Or, one of the wines from Galicia, one of the big whites from out that way.
And the lamb?
The lamb, I've had a Bordeaux thing that I've not fulfilled recently, so I think maybe a bottle of Pomerol, especially with the particular garnishes that are there, the parsnips and the celery root.
Okay, sounds good.
You don't want to do celery root. You don't want to put down Cabernet-driven wine.
Okay.
Because it'll turn into a big glass full of veggies. Well, I think that's all we have time for today on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Oh, if you want to follow us on social media, you should look for...
You can follow me on Instagram as Chef Wolf or on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
You can find me on Instagram, The Real Tony Foreman. You can download this or any of the other podcasts of our programs. Just go to the WYPR website, wypr.org, and look up the page, Foreman & Wolf. And you can find that and Cindy's cheddar penny recipe that our producer, Luke, is going to make as soon as possible. And we just want to thank you for participating in the pledge drive. It's just begun. It'll soon be done. When you tune in next week, there won't be any fundraising interruptions, just programming and maybe a longer, more stressful chef's challenge.
I look forward to the challenge, Tony.
Anyway, it's time to become a WYPR member. Here's how.